Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Passion, drive, and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights, and more. Whether you're into speed, power, or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply. See ebaymotors.com.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Ich warte seit Wochen auf diesen Tag und tanz vor Freude über den Asphalt, als wär's sein Rhythmus, als gäb's sein Lied, das mich immer weiter durch die Straßen zieht. Komm dir entgegen.
Hello and welcome to the Gegen Pressing Podcast. My name's Stefan Bikowski. This is the main show of the week, and as you may have already noticed, we're doing things a little differently this week. Manu is away on a well-deserved holiday in Hawaii, if I'm not mistaken, based on the frequent text messages, images, videos that he can't help but show and show off the sunshine. And as a result, I am here hosting the show. But I was also away at the weekend, and I also missed all the football. So I've had to draft in the B team, which obviously, far from it. Matt Ford is obviously here. Matt, how are you?
Yeah, very good, thanks. No, Manu was in Hawaii, but I much preferred spending all Saturday on the trains between Gelsenkirchen and Cologne. I think that's clearly a much better way to spend your time.
Absolutely. We've had to make an emergency loan after the deadline day to The Athletic for Seb Stafford-Bloor. Always a pleasure, Seb. How are you?
I'm good. I'm worried about Manu's pale Bavarian skin in Hawaii, but, you know, that's sunburn waiting to happen, isn't it, really?
Yeah. I mean, based on the fact that man seems to travel to all 50 American states every year for one reason or another, I'm sure he's probably well experienced in how to deal with hotter climates. But we do wish him well. Hope he's got his feet up and enjoying a well-deserved break. And in the meantime, we've got plenty to talk about, which I guess we'll get started with right after this break.
It's playoff time and the usual suspects are heading to Vegas for the championship. And our partner BetOnline is your number one source for football odds, stats, trends and lines. With everything from point spreads to hundreds of bets on everything from the coin toss to the colour of Gatorade, BetOnline is the number one source for your championship wagering. Head to BetOnline and join today to get into all the action. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Yeah, guys, so we're a little short for time. We're recording this on Monday. We've all got day jobs, which we're trying to keep. So there's quite a lot of big talking points that we want to get through. But let's get started with the match between Dortmund and, you know, their 0-0 draw at the weekend against Heidenheim. Guys, I think it's probably fair to say we're expecting some sort of an upset, if you will. I actually predicted this to be a draw. I think I went 2-2, hopefully, or optimistically. Fortunately, I missed this game. It felt like 90 minutes. I won't be getting back. Matt, Seb, you guys both watched it. I'll come to you first, Matt, actually. There's two ways to maybe look at this game. There's A, this result's been a long time coming. You know, we've talked a lot about how Dortmund have been winning games, but far from, you know, conclusive in their performances. Or what a lot of people might do when they wake up on Monday morning, look at the results and see how many players were injured for this match. And just to kind of give a brief rundown, it's more or less a starting 11. We're talking Adeyemi, Julian Brand, Duranville, Sebastian Haller, Gregor Kobel, Nemcha, Marco Royce, Julian Ryerson, and Jadon Sancho all out of this match. Where do you fall on that kind of scale of giving them credit for getting a point to begin with, or was it a sorely 2 points dropped?
You're right, it was coming. I was at the first two games against Darmstadt and Cologne, and then despite the results, actually very similar performances to what we saw in Heidenheim. Bochum, similar. Difference being that in Heidenheim, Dortmund didn't produce those individual moments which have got them out of jail so often, whether that be Jamie Bynoe-Gittens producing moments of pace to break defences down the right, whether it's Niklas Füllkrug stepping up with penalties, like, yeah, for hat-tricks largely from the penalty spot, with all due respect. Yeah, there were a lot of players missing. You've just been through them. On the other hand, a lot of those absentees weren't missing in previous performances when it wasn't actually that much different. So yeah, this was very much a continuation. On the other hand, if you look at the bigger picture, maybe 10 points from the first four games, 10 goals to one, maybe you can look at a glass half full in that sense, but the performance really wasn't good. And we said this for the previous games as well, they were not good performances. And this time they can't even cover it up with a win. And I think Edin Terzic knows it. He looked as angry as I've, I think, ever seen him. In his post match interviews and his press conference, in which he repeated the point that he's been dealing with unsatisfied players for the past weeks and months who have been demanding to play, and yeah, by all accounts, complaining that they're not getting minutes. Well, they got their minutes in Heidenheim, Terzic said, and it was far too little.
It feels like there's a frustration at Dortmund, Seb. It's certainly something I've noticed. You know, I actually do frequent the Reddit forum for the Dortmund page, and they do like a match thread, and that's where the fans obviously jump in after games. And from the last, more or less since the turn of the year, really, there's been frustration, and it felt like this result was finally a kind of, what's the word I'm looking for? Lightning rod for a lot of the kind of frustration that's been building up over the last month or so. And a lot of Dortmund fans saying, you know, this is proof of the theory or the concerns that we've had, that this team aren't really going anywhere. They're kind of almost like treading water. And, you know, this is just proof of it. I mean, is that a bit harsh, or do you think, that kind of criticism is warranted?
No, I don't think it's harsh. And I think also it feels like this game was always going to produce this response, because I just think Frank Schmidt is a better coach than Terzic, like, fundamentally. And Matt touched on it before about Dortmund's reliance on individual moments. I don't think that's ever going to be enough away to Heidenheim. Especially given the kind of the individual players that Terzic was able to put out. I also think if you're a Dortmund fan, like, first of all, you might concede that it could have been worse. Kleindienst had the two best chances of the game. Definitely should have scored the first one after that sloppy pass from Salih Özcan. Had he not kind of inexplicably fallen over in injury time at the end of the second half, he would have scored the winner. But like, when you see that sloppiness, it always seems to be indicative of something which is not quite right in a team. I don't think that's fair. It's a kind of a point that media people like me make, people who've never been inside a dressing room or a, you know, professional football pitch. But I think a lot of it's fair, because I think also, like, if you're a Dortmund fan and you were held at Heidenheim, I think you'd say, okay, well, they haven't lost there since October, and they've beaten better sides than Dortmund this season. At the same time, what was there in that performance that you could cling to and say, hey, well, yeah, you didn't get the result, but there's something promising in there. Where was the... There was nothing in it that told us anything that we didn't already know. Like, I didn't think Mukoku and Füllkrug worked as that sort of, like, semi-two at the top of the pitch. Didn't work at all, really. I'm not a Donny Marlon fan. I don't think he's a particularly good player. He's either a 7 out of 10 player. Didn't think he influenced the game. Özcan, to me, still looks damaged from that performance against Bayern back in the autumn, when he just got obliterated in midfield. And they look fragile at the back, and part of that is Kobel being missing, but there's not much cause for optimism. So I don't really have a problem with the Dortmund fans' response. And also, like, given the kind of fluctuations at the top of the club, Akivatska obviously on his way out, and the kind of the uncertainty that breeds, dissatisfaction with transfer activity, like, there's not a lot at Dortmund at the moment which isn't fluid on a week-to-week basis, is there? So what are you buying into? That's really a question rather than an accusation. I'm not a Dortmund fan, so I have no vested interest. But what is it that you're supposed to believe in at Dortmund at the moment? Like, apart from maybe the promise of someone like Jamie Bynoe-Gittens, perhaps, or, you know, like a micro issue like that. I don't know where the optimism is supposed to come from.
Yeah, that's actually a really interesting point, because it is that kind of malaise, isn't it, from one week to the next, and the lack of any kind of... You can understand if there's a young head coach who's trying to build towards something, but it just continually feels like Terzic is just kind of... He's got his magic 8-ball or cue ball, whatever it's called, and he's just picking his lineups based on that almost. There's no kind of coherent strategy behind it. I continue to come back to this almost over-reliance on Julian Brandt. And like I said, I didn't watch the game, but I did check some stats before we came on to do the show. And, you know, if you look at all the players who've created key passes in the Bundesliga this season, which is a pass that leads to Shaw, he's the only Dortmund player in the top 50. Whereas, you know, Leverkusen have three in the top 10. Bayern Munich have countless. RB Leipzig have...
Stuttgart.
Stuttgart. Leipzig have four, I think, in the top 20. The next player for Dortmund is Niklas Füllkrug at 48. You know, which probably says everything you maybe need to know. You can then kind of look at passes into the final box. And again, there's only three players in the top Dortmund for the Dortmund team there. And it feels like even that system where he's almost playing like a 4-3-3, or in this case a 4-4-2, it feels like such a kind of very basic and simplistic tactic and formation. And, you know, we're going to put out four defenders, we'll put out three strikers, and let's just hope something magical happens in between that to make it all gel together.
Did you think, Stefan, that, like, so when I watched this game, I saw a little bit of intent from Terzic, because I would say that, like, maybe this is probably closer to a kind of like a Leipzig style 4-2-2-2, and that was probably a recognition of the fact that if you play with, like, a single centre forward and two wide forwards, you're kind of playing into Heidenheim's hands, because they're so good at, you know, against the cross, and they're so good at blocking up the centre of the pitch, that you're trying to compensate for Brandt's absence by loading the middle of the pitch. But you can't do that if you haven't got number 10s in your side. Like, there's no one there who can pass the ball. So it's like this kind of, it doubles down on whatever frustration you feel with Terzic. It's kind of, well, he also doesn't really have the tools when, okay, the injury list is long, but even when everyone's fit, there is still that reliance on Brandt, because he's really the only player who does what he does in this squad.
I think a reliance on Brandt, but also on substitutions, which, yeah, we've touched on it before in recent weeks, that one thing that Edin Terzic does often get right, and that's to his credit, is that I think he does change the game frequently with the substitutions, and with impact players off the bench. Mukoku, Bynoe-Gittens, often they don't necessarily have the same effect when they're starters. But in Heidenheim, his substitutions, I thought, for one side, had the opposite effect. Even they didn't work. I'm thinking particularly bringing off Bynoe-Gittens, I thought, was a strange one. He was hardly pulling up trees, but he probably was Dortmund's most dangerous player, and to bring him off in the second half, I thought, was a strange one. Bynoe-Gittens himself, he looked frustrated coming off, and I think understandably. Ben Zabaini being brought on was almost single-handedly culpable for that, for conceding a goal in the 92nd, 93rd minute, that cross that came across to the back post, where Ben Zabaini has left, I think it's Shimmer, completely unmarked at the back post. So it could have backfired pretty spectacularly. Otherwise, yeah, I think the point regarding Dortmund being forced to go down the middle, yeah, clearly worked from a Heidenheim perspective. Dortmund were incredibly narrow. Füllkrug, Marlon, Moukoko constantly chipping over each other's feet in those really central areas. I thought there was also a strange irony to Dortmund's best move of the match, which led to Marlon's disallowed goal. And it was a good move. It's probably the only time they moved it quickly and clinically and cleanly through midfield. But even that came as a result of Thomas Meunier almost giving the ball away at right back and prompting what Heidenheim would probably claim was a foul on Kleindienst. I'm not sure. Maybe he gets just ahead. But the only reason that tackle takes place is because his touch is terrible and he's almost given the ball away in a dangerous position. And it's only arguably because of that Dortmund are able to break so cleanly and with so much space. So, yeah, definitely, without a doubt, Dortmund's worst performance of the season. And as for where they go, you've touched on the bigger picture. I do suspect that it's a bit of a... The season is already a little bit of a write-off given the changes which are taking place in the bigger structures of the club. It's difficult to see where it goes, who replaces Vatsko, what role that leaves Sebastian Kehl playing, does he move into a role with a similar seniority to Vatsko, what happens with Matthias Sammer as Vatsko's personal advisor. There's so many ups and downs, and whatever structure comes in, are they going to stick with Edin Terzic? Is he going to suit whatever strategy ends up being in place? The whole thing seems a little bit up in the air, which leads to the rest of this season being a little bit of a write-off, I suspect.
Yeah, I mean, that's probably a good way to maybe put a cap on this, because I wanted to kind of say, Seb, that you look at those next kind of run of fixtures that Dortmund have in the coming weeks. They got Freiburg at home, Wolfsburg away, and then they got PSV in the Champions League. Then even after that, Hoffenheim, Union and Bremen, they're all more or less, I mean, perhaps maybe PSV in the Champions League, has six fixtures there that you could see Dortmund continuing to kind of sleepwalk through before, you know, they play the big hitters in March, you know, Frankfurt, Bayern, Stuttgart, Leverkusen, Leipzig, really in the space of, you know, 6 or 7 weeks. And it does maybe perhaps just suggest that this kind of concern over the malaise or not a lot happening might continue on for a little longer.
Yeah, I worry about Dortmund in that PSV game, just because that is a dangerous, dangerous team to be playing at the moment. Unbeaten in domestic football all season, cantering really to the Eredivisie title. And from an attacking standpoint, like, just pretty potent. And some of the defensive football we've seen from Dortmund recently, I know that their Champions League form has been above what they've done in the Bundesliga, but at the same time, like, they look vulnerable. And yeah, like I don't feel confident predicting what Wolfsburg are going to be like week to week at the moment. I don't think even Nikita Kovac knows. but yeah, it's troubling. Stefan, if I may, just one word on Heidenheim.
Sure.
One of my players of the season actually has been Jan Niklas Beste, who I've loved watching. I really enjoyed watching in the Zweite Bundesliga last season too. He's just a wonderful footballer. And Heidenheim are almost certainly going to stay up this season, which is great credit to Frank Schmidt. But yeah, he's got the irony of course being he's a former Dortmund player. I think he was spent some time in the Dortmund academy. But just for anyone who hasn't seen him play, like he's just a delight. And I thought he was probably the best player on the pitch again on Friday night.
He gave Thomas Meunier the run around all evening.
Yeah,
so, yeah, really good performance.
Like, he's done that to better players than Meunier as well, like this season. And I'm impressed every time I watch him. I knew very little about his backstory until last year, and I'm a sucker for that story of player gets discarded when he's quite young and then works his way back up the divisions. And now he looks like he's worth, you know, 20, 25 million euros. He's a super player.
Absolutely. No, it's a nice positive note to end that game on, actually.
I felt like I needed to redress the balance. You know, it's Monday. we can't be that negative this early in the week.
No, absolutely. Let's talk about another fascinating, joyous occasion, and that was Cologne's 2-0 win over Eintracht Frankfurt. Matt, you were at the game. As we were saying before recording, aside from the Dortmund match, is probably the one genuine kind of upset of the fixtures this weekend. It's Cologne's first win since the 1st of December, if I'm not mistaken. You know, we have talked about Cologne a wee bit in recent weeks and how things have just kind of looked a little concerning, a lack of real maybe progress. And then all of a sudden, Frankfurt come to town and suddenly there's fireworks. What happens here?
Save big money on your outdoor project now at Menards. We have everything you need to keep your outdoor power equipment running smooth, so you can keep that lawn in tip-top shape or enjoy some time on your boat. Right now, all FVP lawn and garden and marine batteries are on sale through May 5th. Check out our entire selection of FVP batteries today and view our weekly flyer on Menards.com for more great deals.
Save big money at Menards.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
It's playoff time and the usual suspects are heading to Vegas for the championship. And our partner, BetOnline, is your number one source for football odds, stats, trends and lines. With everything from point spreads to hundreds of bets on everything from the coin toss to the colour of Gatorade, BetOnline is the number one source for your championship wagering. Head to BetOnline and join today to get into all the action. BetOnline, the game starts here.
Yeah, I think Cologne probably played Frankfurt at just about time. Come on to them in a sec, but they are having a little bit of a dip in form, perhaps to a large degree not held by AFCON absentees, but we'll come on to them. Cologne's performances haven't been that bad. I think I thought in the first half against Dortmund, before they completely fell apart, in the first half they were actually okay. They actually matched Dortmund quite well. The performance away at Wolfsburg, 1-1 draw, was also, you know, they certainly weren't the second best team away at Wolfsburg. The problem all season has been scoring goals. Partly that's been due to injuries, partly the likes of Minor, Tigers simply not being of the required quality. I think Dejan Lubicic has been one of the most profligate forwards in the league, and he actually continued that against Frankfurt. But yeah, step up Jan Thielemann and step up Farid Alidou, ironically on loan from Frankfurt. And I think again after a similarly good first half where they absolutely matched Frankfurt, I think there was, I mean, certainly through midfield, I think obviously Florian Kainz in the middle is by far and away Cologne's best player, although just to his left, Fink Grefer, the young lad, 19, having an increasingly good season as well. They more than held their own against Frankfurt, and maybe needs a little bit of help from Niels Nkunku getting himself needlessly sent off. But when the goals then came, albeit with Frankfurt out of 10 men, they absolutely weren't undeserved. And I think, yeah, without getting overly carried away, just deserves for some perhaps very steady and initial progress being made under Timo Schulz.
Seb, just to kind of flip this on to Frankfurt for a moment, this was a game that saw one January signing starting, two January signings come off the bench, one in Ekitiki, who had joined days before the game. And if I'm not mistaken, I read this morning that a fourth in Donny van de Beek hasn't even been registered for the club's European games this season. Do we need to maybe give Frankfurt a bit of time here? Because obviously Todd Muller is dealing with an absolute avalanche of new players this season. And you know, as Matt said, maybe this is the perfect time to play Frankfurt because, you know, they're literally still reeling from such a busy transfer window.
Yeah, I think so. But I think you see this pattern repeated all across Europe. Like, it's not just the players they've added in January. It's what they lost back in the summer. I mean, they had their entire attacking structure ripped out. Kamada went. Kalimowani obviously went very, very late in the window. And you kind of, like, at different times, depending on what... You can watch Frankfurt and be incredibly impressed by what Tottenham has achieved in a short space of time. And then within days, there's something really dispiriting. And I felt like the Nkunku sending off was... It's kind of indicative of that in the way, because it's kind of mindless. Like, he had two goes at trying to get his yellow card off Alidu. Like, I think at one point tried to grab his ankle and then tried to grab his shirt. Was just absolutely determined to get himself sent off. I mean, not literally, but... And that's kind of, it's very difficult to analyze a performance when that kind of thing happens. So I don't think I don't think it's really time to decide what their trajectory is going to be under Topmuller. And also, ultimately, okay, Van der Beek might stay. Ekitike is not going to be giving up his Paris Saint-Germain wages, whatever they are, to play for Eintracht, I wouldn't have thought. And I don't know what the kind of the detail is within Sasa Kalajic's loan contract, whether there's a permanent option there or not. But this feels like the season after the year before. Does that make sense? Just because, like, there are too many kind of placeholding players. Like, is Van der Beek going to give up his Man United wages, which I imagine are pretty substantial? I don't know. So it's kind of what we said about Dortmund. I feel much happier about Eintracht than I do about Borussia Dortmund, but I still don't know which parts of the squad I'm allowed to invest in as a fan emotionally, because who's going to actually be there next year? So I don't know, and I haven't watched enough of this game really beyond kind of 5 minute highlights to know what to take away from it, other than obviously the two red cards. By the way, Alidu's career is an oddity, because I remember he was born in Hamburg and obviously grew up at HSV, played maybe a couple of hundred minutes for HSV in the Zweite Bundesliga before his contract ran down and he decided to go on a free transfer to Eintracht. It's one of the craziest career moves I've ever seen. Like, not that he had to necessarily stay in Hamburg, but you walk away from a situation where you're getting starting minutes as a player and then you give that up because you get the kind of the move to the Bundesliga, and then he's barely been seen over the past couple of years, and he doesn't look like he's progressed as a player at all. It's I don't know, it just always struck me as someone who's been kind of badly advised, because I think there's a really good player there. There's a lot of talent to him, and when he first broke through, like, he looks like such an interesting kind of attacking component, but I haven't really noticed him since he popped up and scored a Champions League goal against Tottenham a couple of years ago, just out of nowhere, and then disappeared again.
I think Seb's right to point out just how difficult it is to judge Frankfurt, and I think that's maybe a result of Frankfurt themselves being a victim of their own success in recent years. I'm not really sure where Frankfurt themselves, I'm not sure if they've decided where exactly to place their expectations and their aims, and they've had four or five absolutely phenomenal years. I mean, it really should not be underestimated what a ridiculous achievement that Europa League win was, which is why I think that particularly there's an article that I read in this morning's, so Monday morning's Kicker today, Kicker magazine, which I think is a bit overly critical of Frankfurt, basically saying there's the game against the result, the defeating Cologne, was a shot across the bows for Dino Topmuller. Given the poor performance, and it was a really poor performance, and that's fine. The performance against Mainz last week was also really poor, albeit they managed to save themselves with a fairly unorthodox Mario Götze header. Donny van de Beek in that game, by the way, even worse than I ever even saw him in Manchester, to be honest. One particular moment will never, and that's saying something, isn't it? One particular moment that stays in my mind, where I think he receives the ball in the centre circle and then he has loads of space, but rather than turning and, you know, moving to move forward and open up play, he simply takes a touch, plays the ball slowly back into defence. The entire crowd moans. He gets dragged off at half time. speaking to someone that close to Frankfurt who was already saying that Van der Beek has an awful lot to do to even consider being able to stay in Frankfurt beyond the end of the season. Having said all that, there are still, despite the AFCON absentees, and again, don't underestimate what massive absentees Marmoush, Chaibi, Elias Skiri have been. Chaibi and Skiri were back against club. Marmoush is still away. I think he picked up some sort of illness whilst on AFCON duty. These are the players who we were praising to the rafters just before Christmas when Frankfurt were sticking five past Bayern Munich. They beat Borussia Mönchengladbach at home as well. They were by far the better team in that 3-3 draw at home to Borussia Dortmund. They won away at RB Leipzig on the first game back after the winter break. There are still an awful lot of positives around Frankfurt. Given the previous results, even a 2-2 draw away at Darmstadt, albeit in the derby, albeit it being a last-minute equaliser, given the previous results, you would probably have ticked off a point away at your local rivals. I think there are still positives to be seen. I think the criticism in Kicker this morning is a little bit premature, a little bit harsh. Fixtures coming up are quite favourable: Bochum, Freiburg, Wolfsburg, Heidenheim, Hoffenheim. AFCON absentees coming back. I still have question marks over the role that Sasha Kalajic will play. Surely based on the fact that I think he's coming into a very different team to the team he played in at Stuttgart. Stuttgart, he's very much a target man, particularly for crosses from the likes of Bernd Souza down on left-hand side. Frankfurt play a completely different way, much more vertical, much more on the ground, paced on the counter-attack with the likes of Marmoush. Not necessarily sure how Kalajic will fit into that. That'll be a puzzle for Tottenham to solve. Despite a couple of bad performances, and Cologne was particularly bad, I wouldn't be overly down in the dumps about Frankfurt just yet.
Matt, before we move on to our last topic, I do want to just touch on the fact that you're also the Schalke game on Saturday, a very important win over Eintracht Braunschweig. Like I said, we are short for time this week, but, that was a huge result for Schalke. I was reading over the weekend about how if they got relegated this season, then, there's some serious concerns over the club's liquidity. Just briefly, I guess, because like I said, we're running out of time, but what was it like in that game and how important was it?
Yeah, I like to check up on Schalke from time to time. Obviously, I think most of our focus is generally on the Bundesliga, and perhaps rightly so, but there are obviously some huge names in the second division as well. And Schalke is threatening again to become a massive story, so I wanted to speak to a few people and see things for myself. I'd also obviously heard the rumours and read the reports about potential issues with another relegation to the third division, which could potentially lead to an automatic relegation down to Division 4. These are just due to Schalke not having the liquidity and the capital to afford the licence. These are all very much speculative suggestions at the moment, so I wouldn't read too much into them. There's an awful long way to go. There is potential danger there for Schalke. There is a long way to go in their second division season, though, and this season, like previous seasons in Division 2, the table is so tightly packed. 2, 3, or 4 consecutive wins or defeats can send you flying up the table or down the table in a heartbeat. I think despite Schalke's issues, they're only actually 7 points off the top half, or six or seven points off the top half. So a lot can change. Indeed, a lot changed on Saturday. They got a vital win over Eintracht Braunschweig, well deserved as well. After a pretty poor first half, they were much the better team in the second half. The goal was extremely neat, very well worked from a particularly impressive player at left back, Demi Merkin, Anglo-Dutch. Not a player I actually had on my radar, but very impressive, hard work up and down, offers a lot offensively as well as defensively. Played a great ball into Kenan Karaman for Schalke's winner. So there is hope there, I think, for Schalke. There are probably worse teams in that division. But there are clouds hanging over them as well, which I think we'll go into in more depth at a later date.
Yeah, we certainly will. We'll do a deep dive into Schalke in the coming weeks, that's for sure. Seb, we're actually going to stay in this Zweite Bundesliga because another result on paper, which would have probably gained plenty of headlines on its own. Hertha Berlin's 2-1 defeat rather to Hamburg in Berlin. But as they say, headlines for all the wrong reasons, I guess, on this game. There was a 32-minute delay due to protests from the fan groups, both clubs, if I'm not mistaken, over the DFL investor plan. We've talked about this, touched on it at points over the weeks. We've actually done a few deep dives after the last vote, at least Matt and Manu did. Really good listen for anyone who wants to subscribe and find that in the feed. Let's just dive into this because it's quite an interesting topic. We've got maybe 5 minutes left. I'll let you jump in, Seb, and say your piece.
Yeah, well, it was interesting because obviously we've seen this a lot of times before and you guys have covered it on the podcast. This was different because instead of just one shower of tennis balls, there was an initial shower, stewards cleaned them up, players helped out. And then every time the game threatened to restart, you'd see five or six coming out of the curve. And, you know, because obviously at Olympia Stadium, you need a pretty good arm to throw a tennis ball from the stands to the pitch. They were using those, the sticks that dog walkers use to throw balls in the park. They were using those to hurl them. And I was watching on television. I wasn't at the game, but it struck me, it was interesting how negative Sky Deutschland were in their commentary of it. They were talking about how, well, yes, you've made your point and it was fine when it was 2 or 3 minutes, but then this is ruining the game. And I kind of disagreed. Like I haven't been here long enough in Germany to have a definitive position. Like I have a soft spot for the Hamburg clubs, but I'm not a fan of either. When I go to games, I go as a member of the media, so I don't pay for my ticket and I'm not a member of any of the clubs. So it's not really my place to take a position. But I've come from a league where, in England, where it's a capitalist paradise. Everything goes, there are no rules. Everybody's allowed to own a football club. The fan is a customer and, you know, the fan has no recourse when things don't go their way. And, you know, they're just told to, right, we'll leave your seat and we'll put somebody else in it. And so purely from that perspective, as a contrast, like I respectfully disagree with commentary on Sky because fans having an agenda is a really, really, having agency, I'm sorry, is really important because forgetting what they're protesting on, like a fan having a voice, just because it's mildly inconveniencing to television, that's in itself is not a problem, actually. Yeah, there's also that there are other issues there too. Like, you know, obviously there was Hertha Berlin fans are still overcoming the death of Kay Bernstein. There was a really nice Haas Foul banner in the guest block, kind of recognizing his passing, which was a really nice touch. Fans are important, and I'm not stating a position on this issue, but like if you're broadcasting German football, I hate to say it, but like one of the big tools behind your broadcasting contract are the supporters, right? Because that is a huge selling point around German football. Yes, I know, very healthy goals for columns and, you know, loads of goals in each game, great. But then one of the statistics which is always thrown around is the attendance, which is the highest in Europe, right? And okay, this is a Zweite Bundesliga game, but the point stands. Like, if you're going to criticize the way the fans behave, it's a little bit of an hypocrisy. If you're trading off the atmosphere that they themselves create, and they deserve to be heard. And so I'm pleased to hear them. And my wife is watching with me, and my wife's a bit more ultra-minded. She's a St. Pauli fan. And like, she's pretty annoyed about the kind of the things that were being said on television. And I get it. Like, her German's a lot better than mine. So she could probably understand the nuance, but I don't like it. I don't like broadcasters like taking umbrage with direct action like that. Because I've seen the end of the road, Stefan. I've seen where it leads. The Premier League is a grotesque cartoon of a football division. And I think we can all agree about that. You can say, well, the DFL investment deal is, it represents just 8%. But then the point is that where does that lead to in the future? And I'm not expressing opinion, but the legitimacy of the concern is fair. If you have the Premier League as this big example of what bad football can be eventually.
Yeah.
Matt, there was an interesting, just to kind of pick up on what Seb said about Sky Sports' coverage, there's an interesting opinion piece in Kicker on Monday morning. scathing, I would say, of the protest. You know, they made a quip about how, 32 minutes, the delay. There's been longer Grand Slams in that time period, probably more tennis balls used on the pitch in Berlin than there would be in that game. Arguing that, a couple of thousand ultras ruined a perfectly good atmosphere for 58,000 fans. And then they made a point of saying that, the Hertha fans didn't seem too bothered about criticising the 777 partner group, which obviously owns a controlling stake in Hertha. So, trying to accuse them of basically hypocrisy. But, taking that into account and Sky Germany coverage into account, I was wondering if you could maybe shine a light on maybe what the kind of general consensus or the general opinion is of football fans in Germany towards what is a very effective way of disrupting football games this season.
I think it's not the first time this has happened, and it's not a new phenomenon. But unfortunately, a lot of the sort of the major broadcasters and media outlets covering German football, and I include Sky as a principal rights holder, admittedly, DAZN is a little bit better, I would say. They've been a little bit, I think they have been slightly fairer towards the fans, but also Kicker, and I value Kicker as an institution in German football media massively. A genuinely brilliant institution with a huge history and hugely professional, very insightful, and a valuable tool. However, when it comes to fan culture, supporter issues, they often prove themselves to be massively detached. And this opinion piece that you're referring to is a perfect example. For the author of that piece to descend into the whataboutery as to why on earth they're criticising their own investors, I think is ridiculous, because it's also factually untrue. I mean, there's a reason why Hertha, of all fan groups, have taken this extra step with this protest over the weekend. It's precisely because of their negative experiences with investors. So it was a pretty ridiculous, and I think actually quite pathetic attempt to resort to whataboutery in that case. There's a massive discrepancy and a detachment between some of those who are paid to attend these football matches, and I include myself in that, and yet never leave the press box. There was an interesting exchange which took place on a Sunday morning breakfast talk show on one of the TV channels. It's very famous, it's very old, it's called Doppelpass. It's also probably one of the most conservative German football institutions. They'll sit there at the airport in Munich drinking Weissbier and discussing the weekend's action. It's very much 50 plus editors of quite conservative media outlets, I would say, and various ex-players who are by the very nature not going to rock the boat. And there was an exchange between Stefan Effenberg, so the former Germany and Bayern captain, who sat there in his role as an expert, and Philipp Koster, who is the editor of Elf Freunde, so a German fan culture magazine, been going for decades, where Effenberg basically revealed his own ignorance of the topic, saying, I don't see why the fans are scared about Monday night football or extra kickoff times, because we already have Champions League games and Europa League games in midweek, and they all seem fine with that. And to which, Costa's response was, well, that's very easy for you to say, sat in a red armchair on a Sunday morning TV show, but perhaps try telling that to fans of SC Freiburg, who perhaps during the week have had to go away to Olympiakos in the Europa League, and then on a Sunday have to travel all the way up to Kiel or Rostock or Bremen on a Sunday. Try telling them that the kickoff times are actually okay. So these are opinions being voiced by the likes of Effenberg on absolutely major prime time mainstream TV chat shows, and it just goes to show the huge detachment between some of the major media in German football and the supporters. The supporters' issue has been made quite clear. If fans, TV viewers, broadcasters, commentators, players, club club executives, anyone, if you want to know what the reasons, what the reasons are for the fans' protest, they're not hard to find. The Hertha ultras literally shouted their reasons through a megaphone at the end of the game to their own team at full time. They said, you know, their issue was that this vote for the DFLF deal was in their eyes illegitimate because it was held in secret to enable what they think is circumvention of 50 plus 1, because it enabled Martin Kind, principally, allegedly, to ignore the directive given to him by his club, therefore in circumvention of 50 plus 1. 50 plus 1 is league regulation, so if it's been circumvented, then the vote is illegitimate. They've also, and they went on their own this weekend, raised serious concerns about the backgrounds of the private equity investors involved. CVC and Blackstone are the two front runners after, I think, EQT dropped out. Both CVC and Blackstone count the Saudi Arabian Private Investment Fund, i.e. the owners of Newcastle United, among their biggest backers. Hertha's ultras made this point, so did Bayern's ultras on several banners against Gladbach, and so did VfB Stuttgart's ultras as well. There's also a massive distrust of the bosses and the executives at the DFL, not just because they've redone their vote in secret, but because of the completely different tone of rhetoric compared to the pandemic, when they were all talking about humility, we have to take a step back, we mustn't get too carried away, COVID has shown how reliant we are on the financial wheel being turned ever quicker and ever further. That humility seems to have disappeared in smoke. They've said that what they said in the Hertha ultras statement at the end, they said what you have just seen in those 32 minutes is a protest by a free and vibrant terrace and fan culture. That's what you've seen. It was 32 minutes, and they said there's no end in sight. I wouldn't underestimate how far this could go. The German organised supporters have already shown that they can cause new security concepts to be scrapped. They've caused Monday Night Football to be scrapped. They caused the initial vote for the investor deal to go against the DFL. Don't underestimate how far this can go, and how far the supporters, and it's not just a minority of ultras. This is also a point that's made, and that often gets accused of it. It's just a couple of hundred extremist radical ultras. You know, they might be the tip of the iceberg. They might be the tip at the end of the spear driving this. Yeah, that's fair enough. They might be the organizing power behind these protests, but they do enjoy sympathy.
Yeah, absolutely. I would say that was quite an extensive breakdown, Matt, of the situation, which I'd expect nothing less. We do have to kind of wrap it up here, but as I have said, and I can't stress this enough, Matt and Manu did a really, really, really good podcast after that break, after the recent vote. And as ever, Matt's newsletter every Wednesday goes into deep, deep detail into the fan culture of German football, how the fans are protesting and getting their voices across every weekend. And Matt, I don't want to put any words in your mouth, but I'm sure that might come up in one version or another on Wednesday's newsletter. Or if you've already got it in mind, maybe you can give a quick teaser, perhaps, of what you got in store.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I'll go into more depth on it this week. Absolutely. Also, Werder Bremen celebrating 125 years of their club, but also as me and Manu discussing the podcast, which I think will come out this week or next week, dealing with their own investor issue at Werder. So these topics are all interlinked, and they're not going away.
Yeah, and you know, as Seb said, these are exactly the kind of things that football fans love about German football. It's what makes them stick around, especially the international audience who are looking for something.
Very quickly, as Seb was saying, he's right to point out that there is a direct contrast to the Premier League. If you ask any of these fans in Germany, they're not fans of the Premier League. They know what it is. A lot of them have been there. They go to Old Trafford, they go to the Emirates, they go to Anfield, and they're shocked the tickets cost £50, £60, that you can't stand up, that the atmosphere is rubbish. They know what the Premier League is, and they don't like it.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. It's probably a sentiment I think a lot of our listeners appreciate and agree with. But for now, we do have to wrap things up, so I'd like to say a big thank you to Matt and Seb for coming on the show. Sorry, things are a little different today. We are dealing with some personal issues, or personal absentee, shall we say. I'm sure Manu is chuckling away.
A bit like Dortmund.
A bit like Dortmund, yeah. I'm just going to say, I'm sure Manu is chuckling away as he sits on a beach somewhere listening to the show as it goes out. But back to our regularly scheduled programming next week, that's for sure. And until then, I'd like to say thank you to everyone who listens and subscribes, and we'll be back soon. So cheers and goodbye.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.